This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. We're back. How are you? How you doing? It's good to be back with you. I hope you had a good week. I hope you're doing well. I hope your holidays, whether they're just ending or just starting, depending on which historical figure slash guy who lives in the sky your ancestors believed in. It is a quiet one over here in the Joy household. There are some presents. There are some Zoom calls, some family chats going on, but that's about it. Otherwise, a lot of studio time. So that's my little holiday. I hope whatever you're doing, I hope it's fun. I hope you're safe. I hope you're healthy, happy. I am happy to have Nostalgics on the show today. Nostalgics has been killing it in the house music world the last couple of years, working with people like AC Slater, releasing on his Night Bass label, also releasing with Insomniac earlier this month, releases with Chami's Confession label. You know, she's a jack of all trades, not only producing, but also singing, rapping, really doing the end-to-end work on every track she puts out. And yeah, it just felt like a good time to catch up with her. I'm a fan of her music. She just got some press over in Forbes. And actually next March, this is actually fun. Remember when you used to look forward to things? Remember that? You can look forward to in March, she's going to be part of a Women's Day live stream with Proximity. And it's going to feature a ton of big names. It's for charity. A lot more details are going to be coming out about that in the months to come. So go follow Nostalgics. Keep up to date with everything she's doing. There is a link in the description of this episode where you can go find her. You can find me as well. That's easy to do at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media. You can also reach out to me directly, backtobackpod@gmail.com. You know, it's interesting. I just recorded a new episode, a different episode of this podcast earlier this morning. And the person I was talking to there, you'll hear that episode pretty soon. They were a veteran. They've been doing this for decades. And to go from a conversation like that to this conversation with Nostalgics, who's really just starting to see, you know, what her career is going to look like. She's just getting into that sweet spot right now. There are these themes that are constant, no matter who you are, no matter how long you've been doing it. That's what I'm trying to say. Themes about individuality and authenticity and, you know, really just following your passion. That's what attracts me to people. And that's definitely what attracted me to Nostalgics and to her music. I talk a little bit about it in the conversation you're about to hear, but there's sort of a raw element. There's a freedom to the song she makes that I really like. It reminds me of some of the dance music I was really excited about when I first started DJing professionally. So it was great to get to talk to her, get to know her a little bit. I think you're really going to enjoy it. If you do, and if you want to support this show, if you like what I'm doing over here at Back to Back, the best way to support us, the best way to ensure that I can keep making these episodes for free every single week, to support this show, all you got to do is help me spread the word. Word of mouth is how we grow over here. We don't really spend money on advertising. It's all off of the backs of the community, off of the strength of the group of people listening. It's you. If you're hearing my voice, I am talking to you. So put up a tweet, tag us in your stories. Like I said, I'm at Willie Joy at Back to Back Pod for the show. Let people know they should be tuning in. You can recommend some of your favorite episodes. You could tag an artist you want to see on the show. Let them know that they should appear. I mean, that kind of awareness raising, I know it sounds funny, but that is actually hugely valuable to the show. So shout out to everybody who's been supporting. I love seeing it every single week. And look, you know the deal. Anytime I see someone talking about us, us. I'm going to be reposting, replying, just generally saying what's up, getting to know you. And I'd love to get to know you more. I love talking to listeners of this show. And if you want to come talk to me, you can also join the Back to Back Discord. If you listened to last week's episode with Kill the Noise, you already know I am a Discord fan. I'm on there all the time. The Back to Back Discord, it is a great group of people. You can pop in. I'll say what's up to you. Come share your music, your art. If you make stuff, we'd love to see it. You know, come talk about where you're at, what's going on in your life. The world's crazy right now. Let's talk about it. Let's get together. So the link for that is also in the description of this episode. But today is all about Nostalgics. She was in her studio out in Vancouver when I caught up with her, and it was a really interesting conversation. It's an interesting time to talk to her. Like I said, you know, she had really just caught that heat. She was riding that first wave. She was about to do her first full U.S. tour. And then obviously the pandemic happens and all of that momentum, gets shifted, has to go somewhere else. So it's interesting to talk about how she's navigating that. And just in general, man, she was a sweetheart. This is great. You're going to love it. So let's do this right now. This is me and Nostalgics back to back. Let's go. And you've been in Vancouver almost your whole life, right?
Yeah, I think for most of my life, since I was like 7 years old.
So, I mean, at this point, it's interesting, you know, having been in one place for a big chunk of time like that. And I know there's a bunch of artists kind of in our little scene that came out of Vancouver, some of which still are in Vancouver. I know when all this started, like Caroline Whipped Cream moved back up there, and like Felix Cartel is out there, and a whole bunch of people. Does it actually feel like there's sort of a local community to you there?
Yeah, there definitely is. I think Vancouver has a really good, like, tight-knit community where we all just support each other. Like, we work with each other when we can. Like, I see Felix a lot. I see Whipped Cream a lot. Like, they're both slaying it. But I think other than that, like, the local scene in Vancouver just is generally really good. Like, back when shows were a thing, you'd always see, like, the same DJs, the same, like, local promoters, and, like, everyone knows each other. Because it's just a way smaller scene than America.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And there's some history to it, too. I mean, I'm sure you've seen plenty of it, having just lived there for a long time. But even, I mean, I remember when I first started touring a long time ago. I mean, the first, you know, there were people like My Gay Husband and even Paul Devereaux, who went on to run Mad Decent. You know, all these people like came out of Vancouver. So there's a lot of dance music history there. I feel like it doesn't get shouted out enough, probably.
Yeah, I feel like Vancouver is definitely more on the come up now. There's just a lot of amazing artists coming out of Vancouver now.
Is there anybody else, up and coming people you're working with, that you think are doing really cool stuff right now?
Yeah, there's a duo out here, No Thanks, that I'm friends with. They're killing it. They're making such good house music. There's also Glass Petals, which is Felix Cartel's second project with Johnny Jover. There's so many. It's hard to think of.
Yeah,
on the spot,
I hate those put you on the spot.
It's also like Reezy. He's been slaying it. But I feel like there's a lot of really good house music specifically coming out of Vancouver.
So let's talk about that. House music. How did house music enter your life?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. So I started going to festivals about 5 years ago. And at that time, like, Big Room was huge. Big Room was booming. Like, my first show was Hardwell that I went to.
Yeah.
So I kind of just fell in love with it. And I just went on this kick where I was going to all these different festivals, all these different shows, and just trying to take it all in. I would go travel and just go experience this new festival. But at the time, I mainly just knew, like, more main stage music, which is Big Room at the time. But I remember, I think it was a few years ago, Dr. Fresh was playing this set at Life in Color in Vancouver. And he played like the most sick G-house, bass house set that I'd ever seen. And I remember I was like standing in the crowd that day and I'm like, I like, this is it. Like, I need to learn, like, what this is. I want to make it. Like, I want to DJ. Like, I feel like that day really just changed everything, because I went from being a fan to being like, wow, like, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard. That was the best experience of my life. And I want to, like, do that for other people. So I feel like that set really just made me fall in love with house music.
That's cool. Yeah. Was he just playing, you know, the style he's known for? Was that sort of just the first time you had heard, you know, that subgenre or whatever you want to call it of house?
Yeah, totally. It was like the first time I'd heard it. So for me, it was like something mind blowing. I was like, what is this? This is insane.
I mean, those are beautiful moments, I think, when you can be a fan of something and not necessarily see where you fit into it, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean. And then sometimes all it takes is sort of adding that one element or just changing, you know, this one little thing. And then all of a sudden you see, like, oh no, this is, you know, there's actually an opening for me to participate. Because I think for anybody, any of us who are fans of something, especially something you're really passionate about, you know, I think you're always in the back of your head sort of looking for that entrance, you know, how can I get deeper into this? How can I really make this my own? And it was just kind of a switch flipped after that day.
Yeah, I feel like everything kind of changed after that day, as cliche as it sounds, but I feel like I just really figured out what I wanted to do in life. Because before that, I wasn't planning on doing anything in music or like making music. I just really like loved it, and I was DJing a little bit on the side for fun. But after that, I was like, wow, like this kind of music, like, is just so much fun. I want to learn more about it. And I wasn't even thinking at that time that I want to make it like a career, but I just thought it was so cool that I wanted to go home and like learn it and start teaching myself like how to do it myself.
Right. Well, let's work backwards from that a little bit. You mentioned you were DJing a little prior to that. How did you start DJing, get into that at all?
Yeah. So I started DJing, I think it was about 4 years ago. It was kind of like a year after I'd kind of discovered festivals and I really just loved electronic music. It was my first year of university. It was like first weeks of college, and I'm walking through campus and I'm like, I wonder if there's like an EDM club or like something for like, you know, EDM fans or something. And I found this like DJ club on campus, and I was like, this sounds amazing. I'm going to join it. Like I had no idea like what anything was or like what anything meant.
Right.
But I decided to join it, and I met this like little community of DJs on campus. So I went and bought myself a mixer that week, and then I was just practicing in my dorm room all the time.
Hmm. Was it the kind of thing? First of all, I have to say the fact that there's a campus like EDM club is amazing to me.
I know, right?
I mean, was this, how many people were in this club?
It was a pretty small club, but yeah, I would say like 10 people.
Yeah. That's amazing to me. If I wish there had been something like that when I was in college. It really felt like you had to struggle to find somebody mm-hmm. else who was into that. And it's awesome to hear that there are those clubs popping up. Was it for you, you know, once you found that community, you bought yourself a mixer, you said you were practicing a lot. Was it the kind of thing where just immediately you sort of took to it?
Yeah, I would say I just practice like every single day in my dorm room. So I feel like after a couple months, I started to just get better at it. But again, like I was just teaching myself and just going off of like YouTube videos. So I really didn't know if I was like doing any of it right. But
well, why even practice? You know, why spend that time at the start? Was there a thought in your head of sort of what you wanted to do with it? Or was it just pure fun at that point?
I just really loved it. I thought it was super fun. And then once I got my mixer, I'm like, oh, it'd be so cool to like try to do a show. And at that time I was kind of like promoting on the side for like these underage club nights that happened in Vancouver. So I was like, hey, I already know like a club promoter. I have my DJ set up. So like, I'm going to take a risk here and like, you know, maybe try to like play one of the nights. I was like, I'm just going to do one show and then like, that's it. Like I'm done. I just want to try one time and see what it's like.
I have to feel
words.
Like There's got to be something in the back of your head saying that it's not just going to be the one time, though.
I know. I feel like I was so just delusional about it because I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to do it one time. I'm only going to like do it for this long and I'm going to go back to my school work. No, it did not happen like that.
I mean, yeah, of course it didn't. But what was the thought to go back to your school then? Are you the kind of person, like, what kind of a kid are you is what I'm asking. Mm-hmm. You know, were there expectations placed on you either from your parents or yourself of sort of what you were going to go on to do?
I've always just been like a pretty good kid, like good student. I'm always like the person that like does their homework first and like just gets everything done. But my parents luckily just never really put any pressure on me to like go this route or this route. So I was just able to kind of find myself more. Obviously, they're Persian, so they want me to be a doctor. But I think they just, over the years, have learned that if I want to do something and I set my mind to it, like I'll accomplish it. So they just trust me to go ahead with it.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they moved over to Vancouver from Iran when you were quite young, right?
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I'd love to hear more about that story in a minute. But what I was going to say on the topic is that I think oftentimes, you know, the stereotype of first generation immigrants is that their expectations for their children can be very strict, you know, and I've heard this story from other people in similar situations. And so it's really awesome that they could come over and kind of let you do what you wanted to do, doing a thing that I think probably wouldn't make sense to almost anyone our parents' age.
Yeah, I still don't know if it makes sense to them now. Like, I still have to explain everything. But I'm very grateful that they did, like, just let me figure out my thing. Because I've always just been a very artistic person. But I've kind of been in denial about it. Because I'm always like, no, like, I get good grades. So, like, I should go into, like, something involving being, like, a lawyer or something. But, like, I wanted to make videos. I wanted to make films. Like, I want to make music. I never was into the whole academic thing. I just wanted to make art. But I just never believed I was an artist until I started really pursuing music.
That's actually really interesting because I relate to what you're saying and that I was always pretty good at school too. But, and it wasn't, I worked hard at it, you know, don't get me wrong, but I was good at it. So it didn't feel like, you know, this crazy hard thing I was doing because I could do it, right? But what you said earlier about it just didn't mean the same thing as music did, you know? And for a long time, I sort of thought the same as you. I'm good at it, so I should just sort of keep going. This is the path I've been set on. Mm-hmm. Was there a moment for you when your mindset started to shift?
Yeah, I think it was like my second year of university. So I'd already been DJing for about a year. And at that point, I reached a point where I was playing around all the clubs in Vancouver. And I got like my first opportunity to play like a main stage festival set. And I just remember like I felt like I was just really in the right place and I was doing the right thing. And it just all felt so right. But in the back of my head, I'm like, no, but I should stay in school because there's just always this pressure, like you just said, that like you should continue doing it. It's almost like a safety net to be like, oh, like I should stay in school. It's almost like an easier route to go because it's more set in place for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like I was just sitting in class a lot of days where I would be thinking about like Ableton and wanting to learn more about production. But I'm like sitting there in like an accounting class. I'm like, what am I doing right now?
Well, and you said that it took you a while to sort of believe in yourself as an artist, right? Which I think is something almost anyone could relate to because especially when you're young and just getting into whatever your passion is, it's, I think, really easy to look at somebody up on a stage or somebody who put out an album and sort of think that, you know, well, that's for them. It's almost like, you know, it's like we're two different kinds of people, like two totally. Different species in a weird way. And it's odd. Have you had those moments, you know, now that you're a bit more established, you're putting out records, you're touring, you're working with people you probably listened to years ago.
Oh, yeah.
have you had those kind of odd moments where you know, you end up in the same room with or talking to somebody who before you sort of looked at as that other, that artist, you know?
Yeah, I think you said that beautifully. Amazing.
Oh, thank you.
But I feel like it's happened a lot, but it, like you said, it almost feels like the artist is like unattainable. Like when you're not doing it, you look at someone on stage and you're like, that's not possible. Like that's unattainable. That's like their thing. Like I can't do that, you know?
Right.
But after you like really put in the hours and you put in that time, you're like, okay, like, yeah, I can do it. Like I got it in me. Like it's just waiting to come out right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those funny, it for me, it makes me look back at like my past self and what I used to think and sort of chuckle because, I don't, to use you for an example, like you put out a record with Night Bass, right? Mm-hmm. And AC Slater's label, you know, he's an established guy, been doing this for years and years. I know him since way, way, way back when. And I have to imagine for you who probably heard his records for years and years before you ended up working with him and his label, that has to be one of those kind of moments, right? Where you end up talking to him. He's just a nice, regular guy.
Yeah, completely. Like, I remember meeting him and just right off the bat, like, nicest person ever. Right off the bat, he's just like, he doesn't know me. He's like, hey, like, send me music. Would love to hear some of your stuff. And like, just so warm and welcoming. And I'm like, God damn, like, that just sets such a high standard for like, you know, how to behave as an artist. Because he's just such a good person.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's another great point too, is that I think once you sort of get in the scene a little bit, meet everybody, you have to almost be a very nice, warm, open person. That's a big part of succeeding in this, right? Again, sort of breaking down that stereotype that an artist has to be sort of distant and unapproachable, and when the truth is the exact opposite, right?
Yeah, I think it's just very important to be kind to people in general, whether it is like in the music industry or not. Just creating like a space where people feel like safe and comfortable to talk to you. Like, I feel like because of how nice AC Slater is, Night Bass has really just grown into the beautiful thing that it is. And like all the artists on the label are so expressive of who they are, and they just have so much freedom to do what they want.
I love how you put that. You're absolutely right. Because, you know, these worlds that people build for themselves, that musicians make for their fans to come and live in and walk around in, it's an extension of them, right? And
yeah,
so,
totally.
You know, if you want your fan base, your listeners to have a good time, to feel happy, to feel confident and comfortable and safe, exactly what you said, it all starts from you. Yeah, that's beautiful. I love the way you put that. I want to go a little further back, you know, back to your parents and sort of the way you were raised and how you sort of became who you are today. You seem very warm, very open. Have you always been that way? Were you a social person?
I feel like these past few years being in music, I've just warmed up and I've become like an even more social and nice person because of just the fact that I'm just generally happy with what I'm doing in life. So I feel like that just shows and comes out, and I'm able to just be the best version of myself to everyone. But I think I've always just been very into being kind and, you know, respecting other people.
Where do you think that comes from? Do you think you get that from your parents, your environment?
For sure, my mother, and I'm going to say my dad too in case he hears this. Hey, Dad. My mother is like an absolute angel, and I feel like she's one of my biggest role models because of, like, you know, growing up, I've just seen that woman always put on a smile and be kind to everyone around her, like no matter what the circumstances, no matter like what they say to her or like what happens. She's just always been so kind, and I've just really appreciated and respected that growing up.
How did they decide on Vancouver to move to from Iran? What's the history of that move? Because that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, well, I feel like at that time it was a little bit easier to move from Iran and go to North America. I know it was like still an 8-year process for my parents to like do it, because it's just, moving from the Middle East is just not the easiest thing to do. But my parents had Vancouver in mind just because we already had some family here. And they essentially really wanted to like move to Canada because they had 2 girls and they wanted to give us like a good chance to do what we want in our lives. they tell me all the time, they're like, if we had two boys, we would have just like stayed in Iran.
Wow.
Because they would have been fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, shout out to your parents for seeing that and recognizing that. And I mean, that's an amazing gift to give your daughters.
Honestly, like the best gift ever. We getting real sentimental.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, do you have... So what age were you when you moved?
I was about 7.
Okay. So do you have memories from Iran? Like early childhood memories?
I have a bunch, and I've visited a few times since. So I definitely have some good memories of Iran still.
Like what comes to mind if you know, just like the random things we remember from childhood?
So many like random things. I think my favorite memory is just like going to the corner store every day and just buying a ton of snacks. That's like my favorite memory for some reason. But I remember just being around family a bunch because Iran is a very like family-oriented place. That the beauty of Iran, the food, the culture, all that.
Yeah. Is there any part of it that you wish you had more of here in Vancouver?
I would say like my family that lives in Iran, I would love to see them here because it's just so hard to go and visit them. It's like a whole process to go back.
Yeah, what is that like? I can only imagine, but I'm sure even just the paperwork is probably really arduous.
The paperwork for sure. And also like the mental part of it. I feel like living in Canada, I'm just so used to being like independent and doing like the things that I want and like expressing myself. And if I go to Iran, like I have to cover up and, you know, I can't really fully be myself. And I feel like that would be hard for me. Like, I don't know if I could stay there for too long.
Yeah. Yeah. That's understandable.
Yeah.
Does your family that's still there, do they know what you do?
Yeah. They see some stuff on social media. So they get it. But like, again, it's always like having to explain, like, you know, when you're sitting at a family dinner and everyone's like, oh yeah, so what are you doing?
Yeah, right. Of course. Yeah. Well, and I'm sure there is, I'm very ignorant, but I'm sure there is a local like electronic scene in Iran as well. Do you know anything about that? Is there a frame of reference as much?
See, I would hope so. I do really hope there's like an underground scene there, but from what I know, because I was pretty young when we moved.
Of course.
Is it like it's illegal there? And, you know, drinking is illegal there. Drinking in public is illegal there. I don't know, even know if you can like buy alcohol or if that's changed. But for the most part, like there's no shows happening there. Like all that stuff has to be underground.
Right.
So maybe there is an underground scene, but I just wouldn't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I would put money on there being an underground scene because I think anytime.
So.
Yeah. I mean, there's kids. Anytime there's kids, yeah. They're going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah.
One way or another.
See, I would love to go to one of those.
Oh man, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Is there or was there music around you in childhood? Were your parents musical? Were they playing music? Any of that?
My parents love, there's like a few different Persian singers that they really love. So they would always be playing. Other than that, it was always like, I would always listen to music on cable. So I'd visit my grandparents' house and they had really good cable and they got MTV. So every single time we went to visit my grandparents' house in the north, I would just sit there for hours and just be watching like MTV music videos. And I thought it was like the coolest thing ever.
What kind of stuff were they playing? Like what era of MTV are we talking about?
This is like Christina Aguilera, like NSYNC.
Yeah.
Like
so
that
like late
Britney
90s,
Spears,
early 2000s
yeah,
era.
Missy Elliott, like all those like pop stars. Like that's what I was watching. I was thriving, really enjoying all that.
Well, that's back. I mean, that was, I think, one of the last golden eras for music videos too, right? Where videos still had these giant budgets and each one was like a theatrical release, you know?
Yeah, they were like whole movies to watch.
Did that make you, well, how did you feel about moving when you moved? I mean, obviously, I'm sure it wasn't a choice given to you, but, you know, were you excited? Were you scared? Were you nervous?
I was definitely nervous, but like, I don't know, part of me just felt like it was meant, like it was right. Like it just felt very right. It never felt like, no, like we shouldn't be making this move. Like I was always just like ready for it. And I feel like it was just like meant to happen. And me always being so into watching like MTV music videos and trying to watch cable and see what's happening in North America. Like I was always so fascinated by the culture and like the expression and like people's outfits, what they wore, like what they were doing. I found it so cool. So I was definitely excited to move.
That's cool. I'm sure you have a bunch of awesome photos from childhood. I'm really curious now what your sort of initial style choices were when you first came to North America. Like, did you just go crazy?
Oh my God. I think I just wore pink all the time. Like I would wear like a pink shirt with pink pants and like a pink bucket hat. Pretty much how I dress today.
I was going to say, yeah, I would wear that right now.
Yeah, I definitely, there's like some photos of me where I like look like a little pop star where I'm wearing like one shoulder type of thing.
Right.
And just have this like the sassiest pose. I'm like, yep, she's thriving.
I love that.
Yeah, I was very much like just into like pop music and radio, whatever the radio was playing. That's actually where I heard my first EDM song ever.
Do you remember what song it was?
Animals by Martin Garrix.
Of course, yeah.
It was a beautiful moment. I like went home, I Google, I'm like, songs like animals.
That's great.
I need more.
So it was an instant thing for you. You heard it and just immediately wanted more.
Yeah, I don't know. I just love the energy of electronic music. Like even though I've loved pop music, like growing up, it's just nothing is like electronic music, just nothing. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, to, you know, you were talking about being warm and open and creating, you know, spaces where people feel safe and comfortable and all that. This may be a little hippie, but, you know, that's some of the principles that electronic music was founded on. And so even without knowing that, I wonder if that's sort of something that drew you in initially, if it just matched up with your brain.
Yeah, I remember the first show that I went to was like my final year of high school. My friend's like, come on, you have to go come to this rave. And I'm like I was such a good kid. Like I literally was just head in the books. Like I'm president of student council. Like I'm just focused on my schoolwork. And my friend's like, let's go to this. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but let's go. And I remember going there that night and just standing there like just shocked and like in awe, being like, wow, like I've never felt so accepted and like so okay to just be myself and like, you know, express myself, because everyone around me is like wearing whatever they want, they're dancing however they like, they're doing whatever. And I've felt like I just really found a place where I fit in that night.
And you said that was a Hardwell show?
Oh yeah.
Okay, nice. Was it just him or was it a festival?
I think it was like a few artists leading up to Hardwell.
And I'm just trying to get a mental image. How big of a show are we talking?
It was like a Coliseum type of show.
Okay, yeah.
Like
yeah,
in Vancouver, there's confetti, like lots of people. Like there's definitely thousands of people in the crowd.
Yeah, so we're talking like thriving. Pete Hardwell, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was definitely popping off.
Right. You know, so moving on, you know, you're in high school, you're doing all this. And you said you were promoting shows as well?
Yeah, so in high school, I got into like hosting kind of like after parties at these clubs downtown where I would like rent the club and I would sell a bunch of tickets, and it would be like my night that I was throwing for everyone that was like in my school, in my grad year.
Wait, so you were full on throwing events?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Like, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. I don't even know how I got into it, but it's just something that I kind of fell into and I started doing it because I thought it was so much fun. But at the time, like I literally didn't know that like DJs existed like that were below like Hardwell. I thought there's like Hardwell. Right. Oh, there's nothing else.
There's high school students and there's Hardwell. Yeah.
Yeah. So I literally would like have my little iPod, fill it up with like an hour's worth of music or however long. And then that's just what would be playing.
Okay.
In the club sound system.
Interesting. So, okay. I have so many questions. So these are underage parties. Are these happening they couldn't be happening at regular club hours. Are these like early evening shows?
Yeah, they're like 9 p.m. to like 11.
Yeah.
Type. You can't do them anymore. They're not legal, but at the time they were, so I used to host a bunch of them.
You must have been super popular in school because of this, I have to assume.
I feel like I just had a lot of friends. I wouldn't call myself like popular, but I would say I had a lot of friends.
Sure. Yeah. And I feel like probably more friends once you started doing it, right?
Once you started, for sure.
And so you just bring an iPod, throw on your iPod. And was it just you? Was there a group of people doing this?
No, like I just decided to do everything myself, like as I try to do with everything. But I just hired like a bouncer, and then that came with the club pretty much. And then I ran everything else. I'd be like outside like selling tickets. I'd go in, dance a little bit. And then
wow.
The music would be playing.
Were you making money off of this? I mean, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that must have been great in high school.
Yeah, it was really cool because I didn't do it for the money initially, but then I was like, I get money too, and I get to dance and host this night. Let's go.
Oh, that's so funny, man. How many people would go to these nights?
I would sell them out. Like, they were doing well. I would say, like, over a few hundred for sure. I would grind.
Yeah.
I would be like, I would be doing, like, my student council stuff on the side, and then on the side I would like run off and like sell tickets in school.
Wow. And yeah. You got good grades still.
Yeah.
Man.
Focused girl.
Absolutely. How do you look at your old self, I guess is what I'm asking, because obviously a lot of that, those tendencies, you know, doing everything yourself, mm-hmm. executing a project from start to finish, doing it, you know, on a professional level. Not a lot of high schoolers are throwing end-to-end events, selling them out all by themselves. Is there a part of that that you've taken with you into the artist thing? Or alternatively, do you feel like you've been able to sort of chill out that part of you a little bit and be more sort of free in this sort of new version of yourself?
See, I feel like I love that you asked that, because I feel like everything I'm doing now is just a combination of all the things I used to do for fun growing up or like in high school. Like, I used to love making like short films, and at one point when I was like in fifth grade, I wanted to like manage my friend who was a rapper. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing, but like, that's just what I wanted to do.
In fifth grade, you were going to manage a rapper?
It's like that. Along with like all the different artistic endeavors that I took on, I feel like all of that has just led me to this path and like what I'm doing with my project, like as Nostalgics. I feel like all of my like passions and hobbies just really came into one project. Mm.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, with that kind of mentality, it's only going to serve you in this project, right? Because especially you're doing a solo project, especially when you've been doing it for years, but you know, you're mm-hmm. still sort of up and coming or whatever you want to call it. There's plenty of road in front of you. There's not ever an end to the amount of stuff you can do for yourself. Any idea you have, the more you execute it, the more you lean into it, you know, it's all going to help. And so I think all those tendencies, man, you're going to be really well served with that.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel like there really are endless possibilities, and that I really love about it, because I don't know, there's just a lot I could do, and I feel excited about that.
I mean, it's so interesting. I'm stuck on the high school party still. That just sounds really fun.
Yeah, they were popping. That was good times. That was
what kind of music would you play at those? What was on the iPod?
What was that song like? Apple bottom jeans.
Oh,
boots
yeah.
With the fur.
Yeah. Shout out to Flo
like,
Rida.
Yeah. I threw in a little bit of EDM because that's what I was kind of exposed to at the time. Steve Aoki, he was definitely in the playlist.
Right.
So I was hosting these at like Gorgamish, and it's more of like an after hours club. So they operate like after midnight into like the morning.
How did you even know who to contact to throw these shows as a kid?
So I learned because the year before me, there was someone that was kind of doing the same thing. So I kind of just learned from them and like learned the ways and got the contacts to do it myself.
Oh, that's awesome. They passed the tradition down.
Yeah. And I was always just very good at emailing and being like, hey, I want to do this.
Were you like that? Are you still like that now? Are you good at just sort of reaching out to people, not knowing them?
Yeah, I feel like you always just got to like take the chance. Like you never know if the other person is like waiting for someone like you to come and ask for that thing. Sometimes you'll get a no and that's totally fine. Like you might get a ton of no's. That's totally fine. But you might get a yes.
Right.
So
right.
It's always worth trying.
Are you the kind of person, I mean, just hearing about this, all these different things, it sounds exhausting. Do you get bored easily? Do you need to have something to do, to have a project? Is it hard for you to just chill?
I definitely have a hard time chilling, but I don't ever get bored because I always feel like I'm doing a lot. So I never like have a chance to like sit there and be like, dang, I'm bored because I'm usually working on something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds
about
right.
Trying to learn to be better at like chilling though and taking a day to like just breathe and be like, hey, I need to just sit on a couch for a few hours and just do nothing.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I encourage you to lean into that more. I mean, especially in the last year with the pandemic, you know, you're not playing shows. There's more time on your hands. How did you deal with that?
It was definitely a very confusing time. So I feel like I just went from like peak hecticness of being like, okay, I'm about to go on my first like North American tour into being like, oh, wow, like my entire week is just like open now. Like what?
Nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just took it as a chance to be like, okay, maybe I'll never get like this opportunity to like slow down and just like really focus on like one project at a time. So I just took it as a chance to like breathe, get into the studio a bunch and like just really take my time and make a bunch of music and see, like experiment with different styles.
Yeah. And how much touring had you done prior to that? Because I know just from reading about you before we started talking, I know, you know, you went to Europe, you've done plenty of shows. Mm-hmm. Did it feel like it was a familiar thing at that point? Or did it feel like, oh, I was really just starting to ramp up?
I feel like I've definitely done a lot of shows like in different spurs where I'd like gone to Europe, where I'd gone to Asia or, you know, done shows here and there, but I'd never done anything in America yet. So I had my first like whole last tour in America that was about to happen. So excited for it. But I feel like it was like the first time it's going to be like back-to-back shows, like a few shows in a week. Whereas before I was doing like one show this week and then a show like the next week.
How did, the DJing side of it, the performing side of it, you know, we talked about you were in college, you joined the DJ club, got your equipment, started teaching yourself. When did you start playing out? I mean, I know you said there was going to be the one and done gig. You would just do it the one time. Do you remember those early shows? What was that like?
Yeah. the early shows, good times. I actually reached out to like one of the promoters that I had promoted for previously. And I was like, hey, I really want to play like one show like for this event. And they heard my mix and they're like, nah, like take some time.
They're like,
try again
okay.
Later. But I ended up like doing some shows on campus. And then that led to me getting offered to play some shows like at these different venues or events downtown, which just, it kind of just kept like snowballing where like one show would always just lead to another one. So for me being like, I'm going to do one show, it's like that one show just ended up leading to a bunch, which led to a bunch more.
And what kind of music were you playing at those early shows?
I think a majority of it was house music, but I did like a bit more open format where I'd be playing like different genres. It was a lot of fun. I just didn't have as much knowledge as I have now. So like, even if I wasn't like playing the best set, like I just really enjoyed what I was playing. So at the time I was like, I just love what I was playing. And eventually I just learned how to play it better for other people.
I think it also teaches you how to present what you like to other people in a way that makes sense to them, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't just start off with somebody who doesn't know you playing something they don't know. You know, it's not a good place to make a connection with somebody, right? But if you can kind of present it to them in a way that's familiar or give them something they know followed by something they don't know and connect it, I mean, that's, I guess I'm just literally describing what DJing is now, but that's, you know, to do that well isn't a hard art form.
Yeah, totally. I feel like it takes a lot of time and like just doing it and playing a bunch of shows to really master it. I remember like early on, I would get kind of overwhelmed because I'm like, I don't know like what I'm supposed to be playing or like what people want. Cause like, I think I was DJing when I was like 18. So like I was just like allowed to go into clubs. Like I was just legal. So like I didn't know like what people like to hear in clubs. I just knew what I liked.
Of course, of course. And there's so, I mean, yeah, I could talk about this for hours because there's so much. It's almost like a game of chess or something. You have to be thinking a bunch of moves in advance, you know, mm-hmm. not just I'm going to play this song. Now I'm going to play this song. But it's, you know, oh, well, eventually I want to get to this kind of sound, or I want to make sure I play these songs. So how do I sort of take people on a, you know, on the path from here to there? I love thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's like the beauty of really learning the skill of DJing, because you can go like, you could get so nerdy with that stuff where you can like really tailor this beautiful, beautiful set. But that just takes, that definitely takes years to like really nail down.
Oh yeah, it's hours and hours, hundreds, thousands of hours of
practice.
But
once you get it, it's beautiful.
Oh man, it's so beautiful. And I will say, I don't know if you felt the same, but you know, I had plenty of gigs early on where I just ate shit and did, you know, really just did not do any of the stuff we're talking about. And even that was fun, you know?
Oh yeah.
Even eating shit, I loved it. Yeah.
I have definitely countless times, and it's just part of the process. Like you gotta be trash and you gotta like be bad at it to learn and then get better at it. Like everyone starts out just not being good. That's always my advice for anyone that wants to do this kind of stuff, is just like start doing it.
Yep.
Start trying it.
There's
and like
no
be
secret.
Bad at it. Literally be bad at it and then you're gonna get better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You will be bad. Like, there's no secret. And that actually leads me to my next question I wanted to ask you was, you know, these early gigs, you're starting to play out more. You're getting booked at different shows. You're becoming known in the city a little bit. When does making music and production come into that equation?
Yeah. So this, going back in time now, I think I was kind of like dabbling in making music after I saw like, my first bass house set. So I was like, I really want to learn how to make this. So immediately I started by making house music, and I was just like playing around with Ableton and like just trying to make stuff. Like I would literally take samples from like Family Guy and just try. Like I would always just try to teach myself and figure it out. But I think after I got to play my first festival, I played main stage. It was like the opening slot. I walked off that stage, and there wasn't many people because I was just the first slot. I walked off the stage, and I remember just being like, wow, like that was absolutely amazing. Like, I can't believe that I'm here right now. I just really want to learn to do this for real and, you know, be able to go up there and give people like an experience and like have people come out to hear a specific song and, you know, be in the crowd singing along to my music. So I think that was about 3 years ago. And after that, I just went head first into just like staying focused. And I was just staying home all the time. Like I made a lot of sacrifices. I stopped going out to shows all the time. I stopped traveling. And for a couple of years, I wouldn't really even hang out with friends that much. I was just alone at home making music.
That's interesting. You know, in that period, was that even a conscious choice for you to sort of make that lifestyle change? Or did you just sort of look back and say like, oh, somewhere in there, yeah, I started thinking about this differently?
I think that somewhere along the line, I just kind of it just felt right to go that route. Because I also took this artist development program called Cosmic Academy, where I learned a bunch about, like, you know, sound design and what different plugins are. And I really nailed down just how to produce, like what it meant to produce. So after that, I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing now. I want to just focus my time. And it felt wrong, like taking away time to do anything else but that.
I mean, I love that focus. I think that's, especially early on, that's what you need. And that's a similar thing that you hear a lot of successful artists say, but I think that's really hard to do in reality when you're just starting out, you're not seeing immediate rewards from it. And it can kind of feel like, at least in my experience, when I was in that period of my career, sometimes it just feels like, you know, does any of this matter? Is anyone paying attention? Is any of this getting me anywhere? Did you feel any of those feelings, or was it so much about the discovery and just whatever that fire was that kind of pushed you forward?
There's definitely moments that I did feel like that, because it's, no matter how excited you are and how passionate you are, it's like sometimes you're just not getting the idea that you have down into your project. And you're like, well, like, am I really like taking all this time and putting all of my free time into this? You know, it is definitely tough, and you got to make a lot of sacrifices. But I think I was just very interested in the process of it and just loved it so much that I didn't have like an intention of being like, I need to get X, Y, and Z to be happy with production. I just want to learn production. I started liking it more than DJing, which I did not think it would be possible. I think the biggest struggle for me initially was like just the technical side of it, of like knowing how to produce a good song. But for me, when I was good at the technical and I could just make whatever, and I was able to really just focus about creativity, like that's when I started to like really flourish. And like, I was like, I just want to spend all my time making music. Like, sorry, everyone else, I'll see you next year.
Right. Well, I mean, let's talk about the early sound of it. What did it sound like? The really early stuff you were making, maybe even the stuff that people never heard.
It's house music. I always made house music.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting. I was listening to, you know, kind of your whole discography before we started talking. And within house music, I think your sound is very versatile. It can kind of go from one subgenre to a different one, from, you know, something really, really heavy or rowdy to something a lot deeper and quieter. For you, you know, when you started off, was there, like, what was your perspective on it? Was there a sound you really wanted to make? Was there an idea you had in your head of what you would sound like that you were trying to get to?
Yeah, well, I had like my influences at the time that were like different bass house artists. I had, I looked up to a lot of different artists on like Confession and Night Bass. So I think like that general like bass house kind of darker sound is what I was like attracted to initially. I just really liked this like dark house sound, like what Drezzo plays. Like I absolutely love that style. Yeah. But I think once I got into it and I started really learning and putting my own taste and style into the genre, I just naturally started going towards like more like fun, bouncy, like vocal oriented things. And I think it just comes down to like who I am, and it reflects in my music.
Right, of course. And I mean, that you brought up, you know, your own vocals, which I think these days you're putting on most of your tracks at this point, right?
Yeah, I've always wanted to like rap and sing. I've just always have loved it and wanted
like
to do
back
it.
Back to the pop star days.
Yeah. Like me singing around the house with like a, what's it called? Not a toothbrush, a hairbrush.
Yeah.
But I would just freestyle all the time just to practice. And then eventually one day I was like, I want to try it out and see how it goes. And I sat there with like a decent mic, and I just went for it.
It kind of reminded me. I was listening to some of your tunes, and there was this era in the late 2000s that I don't know how much of this music you ever heard. Might have been before your time, but you know, it's what a lot of people call like the blog house era, right? You know, so this is like right before the EDM era. This is sort of what led up to that, and there was a lot of that going on where it was kind of just people. It was sort of a DIY vibe, and there was a lot of creativity happening in dance music. A lot of people just trying something they wanted to try because they were excited about it without sort of knowing where they were going with it. And, you know, listening to your vocals on songs, it kind of reminded me of some of the old blog house vocalists that I used to love in that era. And even some of the sounds that you use, like your sound selection. I listened to your song, Brat. And that to me, like the bass sounds on that is super, super blog house. Reminded me, you know, of like old Crookers records and old, you know, Bloody Beetroots. And the vocals to me were kind of, I don't know, it reminded me of like Uffy or maybe even somebody like Spank Rock. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if any of this has any bearing on your influences or if you're even aware of this.
I definitely know some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
I know like some of these artists. I think like when I was getting into electronic music, a lot of this music was like really popping at the time, but I just didn't know like what blog house was yet. So I didn't know like by a name, but now I can like look back and be like, wow, like
there was just a vibe. There was an energy of that time that that I get from your music, I guess is what I'm saying of just sort of that raw creativity there. It was very raw. Not that what you do isn't polished, not that you're not a good producer, but there was sort of just this, you know, from thought to release, it was like this direct channel. Without too much, you know, the EDM era came in and everybody started worrying about pop sensibilities and how is this going to stream and, you know, all these business considerations. And to me, your music kind of took me back to that just creative era. And I really like that because I think that's something that's missing in dance music right now.
Thank you so much. That's such an amazing compliment. Specifically, like when I sit down to make music, I always just focus on sitting down and just trying to see what I can create instead of having something in my head already or like putting expectations on it. Cause I feel like expectations like really kill creativity. Or if you're trying to sound like someone else, then you're not making what you could be, what your full potential is.
Mm, yeah, I completely agree with that. And what is your songwriting, your production process? I mean, if you just come to the studio one morning, do you work in the morning? Do you work at night? When do you work?
It always changes, but right now mornings.
Okay, so say you come to the studio in the morning, you sit down, where, you know, if you are starting a new session, where do you have a process? Where does it start? What happens first?
It's always different. Sometimes I'll start with like a drop or like a breakdown, like piano, or sometimes I'll just like throw down a kick and then I just will start like freestyling and doing vocals. And then I'm like, okay, like I have a cool idea in my head that I'm going to go through. But it honestly like takes one sound or like one little thing for me to be like, this is a song. Like, there it is.
Is it the kind of thing where once you hear that, you can sort of just picture what the rest of the song is?
Yeah, totally. I feel like one of my good friends said this to me, but songs are already written. You just have to figure out the pieces.
Yeah, it's like a puzzle. And there's some kind of security in that. I like the thought of that too, because then it's not all on you. It's not that you have to be this genius artist that, you know, you have to be better than all these other geniuses. It's just, no, it's already there for you. It's just a matter of finding it and unlocking it, right?
Yeah, fully. And I just always make sure to never compare my work, because I feel like comparing yourself is just the worst way to ever like create art, because you always pigeonhole what you're making and you're like, okay, like maybe I should sound like this person. That's never a good thing.
And what were some of the early successes you had, you know, once you started producing and were really getting into the Nostalgics project itself? Mm-hmm. What were some of those early successes, those little things that let you know, oh, I might be onto something here?
I think my song Mind Tricks, that one came out on Night Bass like last year-ish. I feel like that song just got a lot of amazing response. I was getting like videos from people dancing to it, and I just got so much love from it where I felt like, dang, like people like me just embracing my sound and my style and making what I want. And I feel like that was a very like good experience to have as a producer, because I'm like, okay, I could be as creative as I like. Because I remember sitting down to make that and I was like, I don't know if people will like it because it's different. So I don't know if like how people are going to react to it. So getting like having that be my best song in a way at that time was just very like enforcing of the fact that I should just be creative and embrace my ideas and, you know, make what feels right.
Sure, absolutely. And did you, I mean, at this point you've got many of them, but what were some of the early cosigns or other artists, other people in the community mm-hmm. that really started noticing your music and connecting with you? What were some of those early moments?
Ooh, I think Golf Clap was one of the first people that like really like supported me. They invited me out to Detroit to come to like a music writing camp for a week with a bunch of artists.
Oh, what was that like?
Oh, that was amazing. That was like my first time ever meeting artists in real life. Like I didn't know anyone prior to that. Mm. So I flew out to Detroit, like just saying, you know what, let's take a little leap of faith and see how this goes. And I spent a week writing music with a bunch of different producers. Like Masterio was there, West End, Zendlo, who are a bunch of really good house producers.
Yeah, they're all fantastic.
Yeah. So we just spent like a week making music. And then end of the week, we went to like Golf Clap's warehouse party that they hosted every year. And that's actually where I ended up meeting AC Slater.
Oh, there you go. That's full circle. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Full circle moments. Yeah.
Did you pick up anything, you know, working physically in the studio with other pros like that? Did you see any, you know, anything you took with you from other people's production processes?
Oh, yeah. I feel like we all like learned a little bit from each other, like different techniques that we have. And that's like the beauty of collaborating and working with other artists. You always like find a little new technique. But for me, it was very big being there because it was the first time I was actually, you know, hanging out and being around other artists in person. And at that time, I was just like, yeah, like, I don't know anyone. I'm just like making music and putting it out. And I think going there and seeing how much I got along and how immediate, like how quickly I became friends with everyone, that just really reassured me that I was in the right place.
Mm, yeah, that's beautiful too. And I mean, you know, say we're in a hypothetical world sometime in the future when things are back to normal, whatever normal is going to mean. What's the ideal version of Nostalgics for you? Do you, obviously you're getting more and more into touring. I'm sure once people are back on the road, you will be back on the road. Do you have sort of a vision for it, I guess is what I'm asking?
Yeah. So I love being in the studio, but when shows are back, I definitely want to be on the road as much as possible. I love traveling, and that's one of the big things that really got me into music in the first place. So I want to do a bunch of shows and just really connect with people. My big thing is I love meeting people and creating experiences for people. So I want to be able to do more of that.
Okay, so here's a question. If you're an extrovert, which you seem to be, and you like to meet people and be around people and have that energy, mm-hmm. does it feel weird to sometimes to be a solo artist, to be locked away in the studio a lot of times without that energy around you?
Initially, it was kind of interesting to get used to, like being alone so often to make music. But I think I just really like it because I'm able to sit down and like focus and get my work done. And then I'm able to like go out and share it with a bunch of people. I get to be around, there's a fly. I get to be around all these people. So it's kind of like best of both worlds.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, you know, because earlier you had mentioned when you started really down this path, there were some sacrifices, you know, you were mm-hmm. seeing less of your friends, having less of a social life for a certain period of time. Is there anything now, especially that we've had this slowed down period with the pandemic and looking at jumping back into the career. Is there anything you want to change about what you're doing? Any goals you have, you know, personally, any kind of work-life balance thing you're working on?
Honestly, I just really want to get back out there and play shows. I really just miss meeting people and performing. Like, it's been really weird because I usually will be in the studio all the time and like work, but it's like having those weekends to go play a show and like connect with people again that really like inspires me. So I miss that aspect. That's something I would like to do more of.
We need those reminders, those physical reminders of kind of why we're doing this, right? Because we're in, you know, let's be clear, we're in dance music. It's a communal thing. It's for as great as all the live streaming is and all of that, it's not what it's meant for, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're meant to be all together as a communal thing, as hippie as that sounds.
No, really, I really do miss the community. I want it back.
Yes.
I want it back. Well, when it's safe again.
Yes.
Hopefully soon.
I hope so too, man. Yeah, you know, people are trying different versions of it. There's the drive-in shows. I mean, here in the States, there's a couple states that just said fuck it and reopened everything. And
yeah, crazy.
I'm not into that, but
I know it looks so scary.
Yes, so sketchy. But you know, people are trying, and you can tell. I guess the point is, you can tell that everyone is really missing that right now.
I think when we go back to it, though, it's going to be such a beautiful time because everyone needs to like get in a solid, like at least like a week of partying right away.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
just let everything out.
Yeah.
Oh, I think everyone's just been through a lot of shit this year.
I mean, yeah, I'm definitely ready to get out there and go a little crazy.
Yeah, me too. I've been in the studio like every single day for the past however many months quarantine has been.
Right.
No complaints.
Yeah, you don't
no
even
complaints.
Know, right?
It's, like, yeah. It's almost been a year, I think.
Are you setting up, you know, I guess that's maybe a good way to start bringing it home is, are you setting up plans, not only for when things come back, but just, you know, in the short term? Obviously, you've been working on a ton of music. I'm sure you got a lot of new stuff. Mm-hmm. What are your plans going forward for new music, for anything about the project?
Oh, yeah. So I have been working on a ton of music to pretty much just prepare for what's coming in the next year. But I've got a really big EP coming soon out on Nightbase. Got a bunch of remixes that just drop, like one for Manor and Tombs and another one for Bijou and Dr. Fresh. And nice. Alongside that, I'm working on a bunch of like creative projects. And I feel like, although I haven't, I don't like quarantine, I wish this wasn't happening. I feel like I've at least gotten to make a lot of projects and really just focus on what, you know, I want Nostalgics to look like, what I want Nostalgic shows to be like when we're back. So,
Well, what do you mean when you say other creative projects? Is it, you know, still stuff for Nostalgics? Like,
yeah,
we talking like, visuals, graphics, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Like visuals, music videos, stuff like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Are you approaching it with that same mentality? Are you sort of doing everything?
I'm getting more people to help now.
Is that hard?
That I can't.
Is that hard to give up
myself.
That control?
Oh my God, yeah. it's definitely, I'm just learning. I have a really dope team now, which is amazing. And I really just trust them to do things. So it's nice to not do everything myself now. And I'm just getting more people along to help because I realize you just can't do everything yourself. And there's just not enough time in the day to achieve all the things you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. As the ambition grows, I think, the team has got to grow as well.
Yeah.
You know, you've also worked with a bunch of other awesome labels. You mentioned Confession earlier. I did want to make sure we talked about just how you got linked up with them, what that experience was like. You know, any thoughts you had on Confession?
Yeah, for sure. Confession is actually one of the like labels that I looked up to the most when I started producing because I downloaded every single one of their songs. Like I always played out their music and I loved everything they put out. So one day I actually just like emailed them out of the blue to their demo email, and they ended up really liking one of the songs, and it ended up being one of my first releases.
All right. Well, I hope everybody listening hears that the demo emails, sometimes they do work.
Sometimes they do work. Yeah.
I mean, it's just what you said earlier. You got to put up the shots, man.
Yeah, exactly. You just never know. Like you could email like 30 different labels and no one responds, but like you email 31 and then that's the one that responds, you know?
100%. And have you at this point, have you talked to Chami? Have you guys ever met?
Yeah, I met him at ADE last year, actually. Really talented person, amazing human being. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He seems like a great dude. His album's great too. That just dropped.
Yeah. Beautiful. Every single song on that album is just mwah, chef's kiss.
Well, you know, as we're kind of bringing it home here, what's exciting to you in house music right now? It doesn't have to be an artist or a song, but just sort of what's really fun for you? What's like the most fun part of what you do?
Ooh, I think just being able to experiment and the fact that, you know, there's so many different routes to go with house music. Like even if you're making like bass house music, there's just so many different like subgenres and styles within that, that it's just like endless possibilities. And that's what I love about it. It's like you could be as creative as you want. You can make whatever you want and it's still like in the same genre.
Yeah, I love that, because with that kind of mentality, I think that sets you up to sort of innovate without even really trying to innovate, right? Is that if you're not sort of judging what you're making and just, you know, even if two songs sound totally different, you can kind of judge them all on the same playing field.
Oh yeah, totally. I think if I'm putting together like an EP, for example, it'll be like a bit more similar in styles and energies. But like if I'm just making a single and I'm just sitting there to like make something, I'll just make it. And I think it still matches my other music just because it's like, you know, I made it and it just comes from like my style. So it still sounds the same.
Yeah. Well, that's just beautiful. I hope any aspiring producers heard that, because that's an important note.
Yeah. You just have to have fun with it. Like whatever you're doing, if you're not in music, if you're not producing, like whatever you're doing, you just got to have fun with it. Cause you know, we got a short time on this earth. You just got to enjoy what you do.
100%. Yeah, that's beautiful. Is there anything we haven't talked about? Anything else that's on your mind? Anything else you want to get out there before we wrap it up?
Dang, we went like all the way back to my past.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, no, we did.
I do want to throw out. I really like the jingle for back to back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Fire.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I don't think that most people know that. I don't know if it's even still on the internet, but that's just like it's a clip of an old SoundCloud song I posted probably like, I don't know, at least 6, 7, 8 years ago now.
It's fire. It's been like ingrained into my head by this point. So
I joke with people sometimes that I have a couple people that I want to do like a remix EP for the theme song. So if I ever actually do that, I'll hit you up.
It'll be a very sick bass house remix.
Awesome. Well, I'll wrap this up just by asking you one last question. It's the same question I ask at the end of each one of these interviews. Just looking for a memory, a time in your life, a moment, could be from any time, when in a single moment, music really meant something to you, really had a deep impact on you. And that's meant to be super broad. It's kind of, there's no wrong answer.
It was when I was a little girl and we just moved to Canada. I couldn't speak English yet and I didn't have a lot of friends, so I felt very lonely. And for me, I was able to just put in my earplugs when I got home and I was sad, and I was just able to sit there and connect with something. And I think that moment still really sits with me.
That's beautiful. I mean, it's not beautiful that you were sad and felt lonely.
Wait, but we all get sad.
Well, of course, absolutely. And I'm sure moving at a young age and being in a totally different, you know, not just place, but culture and environment and social setting, all of that must have felt very isolating.
I think it just made me feel okay to embrace whatever I wanted to, because even if I moved, even if I didn't have friends, I felt like I always had something I could connect to.
Hmm. Yeah, that's security, that's safety. That we're coming back to that again. I love that.
Love that.
I love it. Well, this has been great. This is super fun. Thank you for taking the time to do it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me on this.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. Bye. All right, that's the show. Shout out to Nostalgics. Thank you for being on the show. For everybody listening, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't forget, you got to go follow Nostalgics. Keep up to date with everything she's doing. Grab her music on labels such as Insomniac, Nightbase, Confessions, so much more. She's got a lot in the works. Watch out for her big live stream with Proximity in March. And yeah, just go follow her. She's the best. You can follow me as well at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media. BackToBackPod@gmail.com is the email address. But if you want that full Joy experience, you got to come join the Back to Back Discord. Come pop in. The link for that also in the description here. Come share your music. Come share your art. All of that is in the Discord. That's it for this week. Like I said at the top of the show, I hope you guys are doing well. I hope you're having good holidays or looking forward to some holidays you're about to have. I'm thinking about everyone out there. You know, this time of year, we always talk about gratitude. I'm grateful for you, for the person hearing my voice right now, for the awesome back-to-back community. I'm grateful for all these hours I've gotten to share with, some of my closest friends, some of my peers, some people I've never met before who are just great artists, all the conversations I've gotten to have this year on Back to Back. And look, the year is not over yet. I still have some heat in the chamber for you. So with that being said, take care of yourself this season. Be safe, be healthy, wear a mask, take care of each other. And until next week, happy holidays from me and everyone at Back to Back. We love you guys. I'll talk to you next week. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.